Lots of text messages the last couple of days about the prospect of kids going to school. John, I'm a substitute teacher, and I am immunocompromised. What am I going to do? John, teaching kindergarten online is not effective. The kids cannot pay attention for more than 20 minutes. They can't see the book that you're trying to read. They don't sit properly in front of the camera. You can't see them raise their hands. The dog's running around. Brothers and sisters are in and out of the room. Our building, John, and rooms are very old and very hot, even in the winter, 85 degrees plus. I'll bet this is a CPS teacher, because that is the case for so many of those old buildings. It was unbearable before the mask had to be worn. Cannot even imagine us wearing them all day in that heat. Often no air conditioning in many of the schools. And the list of questions, comments, and observations like that go on. Yesterday, Jackie, I forget Jackie's last name, but she was the spokesperson, Matthews, the spokesperson for the Illinois State Board of Education, was on with us talking about the new guidelines.
So the Illinois State Board of Education and the Illinois Department of Public Health partnered on joint guidance to give school districts parameters for bringing children back to classrooms safely this fall.
So then she gave us the five parameters, and we'll go over them for you here. But before I start to run them down, let's also bring Hank Thiele into the conversation. Hank is the superintendent of District 99. Welcome to the show, Hank. You're on WGN Radio. How are you?
Doing well. Good morning.
What district is that? Whereabouts then are you?
We're primarily Downers Grove and Woodridge are where the majority of our families are, but we serve several different communities here. We're the high school, the high schools in the community.
Just the high schools in your case.
Correct.
A very different set of circumstances than grade schoolers, but let's just talk about both and maybe more your particular area. The five requirements to reopen the schools, PPE, mask for everybody all day long except for band and lunch. Number two, no more than 50 people in one place. Number three, social distancing, 6 feet for students and teachers. Number four, screening. The students will have to either certify that they are healthy when they come to school each day or be tested. And number five, the schools have to be constantly clean. New protocols for that. Those are the five Board of Education requirements for schools to reopen. What do you make of all of that, Hank?
Well, you know, first of all, you know, before we get into start talking about maybe criticisms or concerns about these, I do want to recognize that, you know, that our public officials in ISBE and IDPH are working hard on this, and I presume positive intention as we see this information. So, you know, it's unknown, and we're doing our best with it. But I do have several concerns with those, and I think the biggest concerns I have is that there's some conflicts within the guidance. A lot of it is confusing or nebulous, and it's constantly changed over the last week when the health guidance has not changed in the last week. So from the beginning, I would have preferred that this would have been released as draft guidance, and communities and leaders would have had time to go through this, vet it, provide a lot of questions.
So what would you change?
And that's how we've worked in the past.
I won't ask you to prioritize them, but just
so
what comes to mind.
Yeah, and that's the biggest thing I would have changed is prioritizing. You know, is the top priority getting every student back to school? As, you know, your kindergarten teacher in that text message indicated. If that's the case, then some of the other things might have to go by the wayside, like social distancing. If the top priority is social distancing, well, then it's going to be very difficult in many of our schools to bring every student back to school at the same time. So, you know, it would have been very helpful to say, you know, the number one key thing to do is pick one, right? And then after you figure that out, the next thing is this, right? And they've left that up to local school districts. And as much as we always scream that we want local control, this is not an area where school leaders are experts. These are health concerns. And IDPH providing very clear, definitive guidelines on the health aspects that we should be following would have been greatly appreciated by many of us.
Well, I'm not an expert either, and I think what they're asking you to do is impossible, especially if you have a school of 4,000 students, even if you stagger. So now you've got 2,000 students in a day, maybe on a couple campuses. Maybe you've got 1,000 kids in that building, and you don't want more than 50 of them in one place at one time. For instance, it's not possible. So I think you're all going to do the best you can, and there's going to be breaches of conduct here, intentional or otherwise. It's just an impossible task, or else you don't go back to school at all. Let's start with that, Hank. You want to go back to school? Should we at least open the schools up in the fall?
I think the goal for all of us is always to have students back at school as much as possible. That's how we serve them best. All of our mechanisms that are built to care for kids and check on them and make sure they're okay are all really built around 200 years of education in this country of having kids in front of us every day. And trying to rebuild those things on the fly in the spring was an incredible challenge. And even over the summer when we have a couple of months to do it, nobody's really been trained to do it this way. Nobody knows how to do it right this way. And kids don't know how to, parents, teachers, there's a lot of challenges in doing pure remote learning. Even in a district like ours where every kid has a computer and every kid has internet, we make sure that that's the case. I can't imagine another school district that don't have those resources available to them.
Well, let's put you in charge of everything.
Please, no.
And when I get to be king, Hank is now in charge of all schools at all times, so he won't sleep. Should we start then with what? Masks guidance or population in the school guidance? I mean, what would your first priority be?
Well, and that's where the challenge comes in for an educator, right? Is I don't know. I talk to the DuPage County Health Department almost twice a week. I know what their guidance is, but I'm not the expert in that. So it's hard for me to know what is more important, social distancing or masks or both. Can I get students 6 feet apart and then they could remove masks? That's where the face shield, the change in the face shield really concerned a lot of us. As of last week, many of us were building plans of when students were going to be close to one another, they would wear both the face shield and the face mask.
Yeah, I'm getting a lot of texts about that. What's the story on this?
Well, the governor and Illinois State Board of Education on that first day that the guidance was released and then in the follow-up webinars had said that a face shield was an acceptable substitute for a face mask.
It is.
And it is not now, according to the most recent guidance that was released, I think, yesterday or the day before. Even so, I don't think I myself was not planning on removing the masks and going to face shields when students were going to be close to one another. But we thought it was a great option once we had students socially distanced and had them 6 feet apart from one another.
Yeah.
If we could drop the masks and just leave the shields on, then you were in a setting then where, teaching and learning is communication. And seeing someone's face is really important in communicating your ideas. I know you do it on the radio every day, but in the classroom, it's far easier to be able to see people and communicate that way.
Studio interviews are always better than phoners, and you're doing a great job for us on the phone, Hank Thiele, Superintendent, District 99. Sit right there for a minute. I'll take a quick break. Come back and talk to me what you think about extracurricular activities. Can you have a music program or a sporting event at your school district in the fall based on your current thinking? We're talking to Hank Thiele. He's the superintendent of one of the high school districts in the area, District number 99. Hank, what would you say about extracurricular activities, knowing what you know now, going back in the fall?
Well, it's going to be quite a challenge, and one of the challenges is we can't have sports and extracurricular activities driving the choices we make around teaching and learning, right? Our first priority is getting kids back here to learn. And, many of our kids do come to school because they love their activities or their sports or band. And as a former band director, I totally understand that. But it's going to be hard to tell kids that, we need to be in these small groups to learn and social distance, and then to flip that over and say kids can play football and tackle one another out on a football field. So there's a lot of conflicting concerns there when you look at the two together.
I know that, Hank. So what are we going to do?
Well, what we're going to do is follow the health guidance. So we're going to have to try to find ways to get these things to work in a way that keeps kids and staff healthy and safe. So, you know, when we look at band, I know that there's a couple of universities doing studies on what singing and playing of instruments does for transmitting moisture droplets. And I think that study is going to come out in a couple of weeks, and we'll use that science to guide what our next steps are. We believe that IHSA is working with the Illinois Department of Public Health to put together our next set of guidelines for return to play for athletics. Yeah. So we're waiting to see what that looks like to determine how realistic that is. We do have some of our teams back under the stage one of the IHSA guidelines, which is really just conditioning and working out. But, you know, it's a challenge.
Oh, really? But say the football teams have summer workouts. Some of them can be doing that now?
Yes. Wow. Schools can be doing that across the state in small groups.
Sure.
They're little squads of 10.
Yeah.
And they can. It's really conditioning. It's no skills. It's no contact or anything like that. We have a couple of our teams doing that where they actually mark out the space that the students can work inside of. So they're 10-foot circle and or their 6-foot circle with groups of 10, and they do symptom checks on the way in and all of those kinds of things to get students in here and get them back engaged.
Can imagine. Football is funny. It's a fall sport, of course, and I suppose you could have fans in the stands, maybe fewer, but it's all outdoors. It's going to be a lot more problematic in the winter when everything goes inside. But it also sounds like there's just. Not faulting you at all, Hank. I think any of us are kind of scratching our heads trying to figure this out. You don't have definitive answers to these things yet. It's the 1st of July. You need to know what you're going to do on all of these things by the end of next month, and you're figuring it out right now as you go, huh?
Yeah, absolutely. The fact that we're receiving guidance here at the end of June, and we return the second week of August to school, it's a really quick time to figure out every aspect of timeline to figure out every aspect of school. Plus, our community is going to want to see what our intentions are in advance of sending their children back to school. So we plan on having kind of the rough shell built out of what we expect to do by our board meeting on July 20th. So at least people get a general idea of what we're thinking about, because families have to make decisions too. But this is really a short timeline to work on. We wish we would have received this guidance much sooner.
But your plan is moving forward. You're planning on the kids in Oak Brook and Bowling Brook and Lyle and Derry and Westmont. We're talking about Downers Grove here, School mm-hmm. District 99. You're planning on the kids coming to the buildings in the middle of August. That's the hope and expectation right now. I have another follow-up question, but is that premise true?
Yeah, the premise is true, but we actually are planning for three different scenarios.
Oh, there you go.
General scenarios, right, which would be what you mentioned, students coming back and coming back under these guidelines, which, you know, we have to look at how social distancing, and that's all the planning we're working on right now. We've also been looking at remote learning because we have to be prepared if the numbers tick up and things go badly as students start to return, so far as COVID goes, then we might have a period where we have to return to remote learning in one building if it's, you know, an outbreak in a single building or in the community in general.
The final one we're
preparing for is bringing everybody back. And bringing everybody back is going to involve a transition as well because we're going to have to, you know, heal and get everybody back together. And there's been a lot of trauma throughout all of this for students, staff, and families that we're going to have to repair.
Will you accommodate special ed or special needs students first, either because English is a second language or maybe they have some sort of impairment and they're not going to learn well over a computer? Will that population be prioritized?
Yeah, absolutely. The populations that we're going to prioritize are the ones you mentioned, as well as the students that we know that were not very successful last year in remote learning for a variety of reasons. Mm. So we know who those students are, and we know how to meet their needs. But every kid is going to respond to whatever comes next differently, and we're concerned about how do we identify the needs for every student, how we respond to that in whatever format we're teaching in.
Well, in the last semester, you had the advantage of having at least several weeks of student assignments and tests, so they had a grade, and the guidelines, as I understand it, for everybody, were that the students could not go backwards, but they could improve a grade. If you start the new school year without that backdrop, now these scores count. Now you better pay attention, kids, because if you're doing it over a computer, you will be tested and it will count, correct?
Yeah, the guidance last spring was very problematic for a district like ours that was prepared to transition to digital learning. We actually found that dropped the motivation of our students greatly, that grades and attendance didn't matter anymore. So that coming back on the table, we're rather excited about. And our feedback from our students, families, and teachers on remote learning, we surveyed all of them, all of those groups, was that if we return to remote learning, those things need to look more, quote-unquote, normal. So we're excited about that. What we're really concerned about is the relationship building. You know, last year when we went into remote learning, our teachers had already had three-quarters of a year or at least half a semester to build relationships with students and get to know them and connect with them. So if we're fully remote to start the year, because who knows what happens with the numbers between now and August, starting a year out in a full remote format and building those relationships will be incredibly difficult. If we come back to somewhat of a face-to-face, whether that be a hybrid where it's some of our students at a time or all of them back in some shape or format, we're really going to have to focus on, you know, getting to know our students, making sure that they're okay, and preparing them for the school year.
Think about the transfers. Think about the freshmen. Think about the parents who they get to go back to work now. They have to go back to work now. And the kids are, what, going to be home alone? That's a possibility. Kevin wanted to say something to you, too, Hank. You're on WGN. Kevin, what's on your mind?
Well, I just found it, I find the whole thing very confusing as a parent of both a college student and a high school student. But I also own my own business, and the state had no problem telling me I was non-essential and to shut down. But it seems like they're having great difficulty with whether or not the kids should go back to school. If this is a problem, as we've all believe it's a problem, then the answer seems to me that no, they shouldn't go back to school. And my son going to university kind of does scare me. Because if ever you wanted to design a way to spread this, it would be through a university setting.
Yeah, right. Is your kid going to go away to school in the fall?
My son does go away out to Villanova and was there last year and had to cut the year short. But, you know, now that it's going to open, he's hell-bent to get back out there and go to school. And I don't know which way to turn on it because I believe this is a real problem in the country. And if it is a problem, then why are we sending kids right back into it?
I'm thinking about the dorms, you know, like
exactly
the high school you can control, they could learn from home. I don't know. It just seems to me like you've got a better handle on it. But the social gatherings, the dormitory life, those massive lecture halls at Villanova, wow.
And if we were letting prisoners out of prison because we were afraid of them catching COVID, it seems to me it's probably not a great idea to send kids right back into a dorm setting.
So if you had to decide today, Kevin, what are you and your son going to do?
You know, we talked about it last night at dinner, and I honestly, he's going to go back. He's young. The numbers show that they're okay. But then I wonder about the professors and the people that work in the dining halls and security staff, on and on and on. That may be of that target age of the population where it is a problem. And I don't know how well thought out everything is.
Really interesting call. Thanks for the time, Kevin. My best to your son.
You bet.
We'll see you at the Big East. We'll see you at the Big East tournament next year.
Sounds great. Thanks so much.
Hank, what do you make of that conversation?
Yeah, I think colleges and universities, I have a college junior starting up this year, and we have a lot of the same concerns, and they have a whole layer there. But what Kevin brought up there that all of us are trying to balance is it's not just the safety of the students that we're concerned about, it's staff, it's teachers and counselors and, like you said, food service and custodians. We have almost 1,000 staff members in our district, and We're concerned for them, too, especially because many of them are in higher risk groups, more vulnerable groups. So it's a lot to figure out. And that's why we do want to get our families these plans as early as possible, you know. But, each individual family is going to have to look at what we give them is what our possible solutions are and make some choices. And that's part of my concern with the guidance and not having clear priorities spelled out for parents already is the nebulousness of this document is already creating fractures in our community.
I understand that, Hank. I'm going to end this interview now. Do you have a date where you're going to send that guidance to the families?
Yes. So around July 20th, we'll have the first bit, which will have the overall shell of our plan, and then we'll plan the rest out. So thank you.
Now, you betcha. And, and in fact, I won't hold you to that if that changes. And let's touch bases again soon, okay?
All right. Thank you.